Welcome to a brand new season of Crypto Slam Clubhouse, where we talk about all the things you love in Web3. I'm talking about NFTs, crypto, blockchain tech, and communities. And in the Clubhouse, you get to hear from insiders and experts, the very people building it all. Today, we're talking about NFT Day and building for the next NFT bull run, whenever that might be. And of course, we're joined by those experts and builders from around the blockchain. My name is Yehuda. I'm an NFT strategist at Crypto Slam and Forecast Labs. Let me throw it around the room. Quick intros. Maybe Shane, if you want to start.
Hey guys, I'm Shane. I'm the co-founder of Stargaze, which is kind of the main decentralized NFT platform in the Cosmos ecosystem right now. And for those that don't know about what Stargaze is mainly, you can kind of think of it like a decentralized OpenSea. It's like it's its own chain that's dedicated to NFTs.
Cool. Awesome to have you. Michael, you want to go?
Yeah, sure. I'm Michael Rubinelli. I'm the chief gaming officer at Toronto Studios, which is a kind of wholly owned subsidiary of Wax. And for those of you who don't know, Wax is the biggest blockchain in the world by every appreciable kind of measure. And we're excited to be here and love to talk NFTs and gaming and Web3 tech.
Luke?
Hey, everyone. I'm Luke. I go by El Dumba on Twitter. I work over at the Flow team as a community marketing lead. And I've also been working on NFT Day, which is something that we're sponsoring, which I'm really excited about. Every year, we just get together, celebrate NFTs across the ecosystem, regardless of what blockchain, what project, what team you're on. And I think that moments like this are a great way to show that collaboration. We have people representing different blockchains, all getting together just to talk about NFTs. I think that's awesome. And for those of you not familiar, you can just go to internationalnftday.org to learn more.
And the second, Luke. First, in my opinion. I'm just kidding. Yeah, Luke, we're having some issues with your sound. It's not coming through too well.
That's what you get when you have second Luke going. You hunch him up. He's left. He's out. He's had enough.
There can only be one Luke.
I just seemed to call him LG. That's why I went in. That was my bad.
I'm feeling like Luke sabotaged him. All right. You want to introduce yourself then real quick, Johan?
Yeah, sure. Johan here. I handle partnerships and sales at Forecast Labs. Real MTV Man's my handle. I will be in permissionless later this month, so hit me up there. And thanks, Huda.
Great. Yeah, so if today, guys, we're talking about the next bull run, that's assuming we're in a bear market right now. And yeah, by all metrics, really, we're there. Total sales and average sales prices, they've been falling to 2- and 3-year lows. In fact, August is shaping up to be possibly the lowest sales we've seen in the modern NFT market. We're hitting less than $400 million in sales this month. But global NFT transactions 2 weeks ago hit an all-time high with 3.2 million transactions. That's across blockchains. And it shows that even in a bear market, that you can't deny that building is happening in this space. Still though, sales and prices, that's what most people focus on. And the Forecast 500 NFT Index shows that the value of the NFT market is also at an all-time low, down a whopping 13.5% in the past 30 days. So, Johan, it's been a while since we've been in the clubhouse together. Times have changed, haven't they?
Yeah, times have changed quite a bit. We were in the hype run, and now we're, I guess, in the realistic run, I guess they call it, or something to that effect. Happy to have Luke back. Luke, thanks again. Your audio sounds great now. So why don't you give a quick intro and just let everybody know who you are.
For sure. So I am the host and founder of a podcast and media network called The First Mint. And we cover largely sports NFTs. And we have a really tremendous community. And we have a lot of fun, let's put it that way. And generally just try and keep up with what's going on in the space.
Awesome to have you here. That's the thing, isn't it? The last bear market for me was fun, and I was just collecting Garbage Pail Kids. And I think that's where everyone, Michael's smiling because he knew I was doing it on Wax. It was just something to do without any expectation of, I guess, flipping or financial gain or anything like that. It was literally just collecting. Now, tell us, like, what did you guys learn about in this bear market? Like, how has this struck you different than before? Maybe it's your first bear market, or maybe it's your second or third. But, like, give us some insight onto to what has happened. What did you guys learn?
I'll take a crack at that first. I look for larger macroeconomic trends. And to me, we always talk about, you know, kind of Web3 really does kind of map more to Web1, right? And so if you look at the late 90s, everything had a .com extension, just like everything was an NFT. And all the naysayers, all the big money institutions said, there's no future in the internet. The internet's a terrible idea. There's no business model that works. Like, it was a ton of people who told you why something wasn't going to work. But you, if you had this belief that the sharing of information and accessibility to content and to, you know, kind of, you know, consumers was a big idea, then it really didn't matter what investors said. You know, we see the same thing in Web3. It feels like, oh, you know, Web3, NFTs, cryptocurrencies, it's a path to nowhere. It's a scam. It's, you know, a series of Ponzi schemes. But the reality of the situation is, just like in Web1, companies had not quite figured out how to take advantage of the technology to move their business forward, right? And so utility became a really, really big thing. I think a big focus point for us at Wax. And as we talk to kind of project creators and game creators, like, make sure that your content and your technology has meaningful utility that improves people's lives. Don't just do it for, you know, financial incentives. And I think that's the kind of the myopic or short-term perspective that a lot of people come into the space with. It's like, you know, win Lambo, right? And it's just, you know, earning is a result. It's not a goal. And so if you can provide meaningful utility, and you can have scarcity, and you can be mindful of the market, and you can give people something that they really want to own that has value, everything will take care of itself. And I think that a lot of people kind of overthink it, and it's not that hard. Give people something they want that they need, and they'll pay a market, you know, kind of price for it. So that's kind of my takeaway.
Michael, that's a cool perspective, especially with what's going on in the market right now. I know traders, and I speak on behalf of them probably most, confidence is shook out there. So hearing experience from the old Web1 world and how how a different time also navigated similar tech advancements, again, it's pretty reassuring. It feels good hearing that right now.
Yeah, not to kind of belabor this point, but you can go back and literally read research articles kind of from 95 to kind of 2001 when the .com/.bomb, if you will, explosion happened. People like, see, I told you so. And if you knew and if you believed and if you saw a path, like, you weren't really deterred. Like, a lot of people will tell you why something, you know, isn't going to be successful. And that's because the greatest motivator in life is fear of loss. And people want to protect what they have. I'll tell you a great story. So I went to the head of all things The Sims at EA 6-8 months ago, right? And I said, look, you should literally, your game is so beautifully designed to have scarcity and utility and be NFT based and fungible token based. And you can create this world, which, by the way, your players are already doing on kind of not in the gray market, right? They're already trading content. Like, you know, they want to do this. So why don't you just, you know, formalize this and bring it out into the light, make it open and permissionless and trustless and have an NFT standard that backs it and dot, 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 dot. And she said to me, she said, because it's easier for me, it's safer for me to do what I've always done year over year, grow my business 7-8%. And that's good enough. Translation, I've got a cushy job at EA. I make a ton of money. I live a very nice life. And why would I roll the dice and take a risk on doing something like that? Because business model changes, right? And platform transitions are extinction events for companies and individuals. And nobody wants to run that risk. And so it's easy to see why people will tell you something won't work. But the reality is like, you know, those people are never going to be, you know, thought leaders or people who create North Stars to begin with. So yeah, it's none of this surprises us, and we're not deterred by the market conditions. We know everything will sort out, and we're trying to be those, like I said, those thought leaders that kind of, you know, plow ahead.
In a way, it's a good, that type of reaction is a good indicator that you're on to something pretty darn special, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it really is. And it's, you know, like I said, if you want an even more kind of, you know, a parallel that your audience could probably map to is if you look back in kind of 2010, 2011, 2012, you know, these exact same massive, you know, gaming companies, EA and Activision and Tencent and Warner Interactive, they all said free-to-play is a terrible idea. The model makes no sense whatsoever. You guys are wasting your time, you know, and yet out of that kind of, you know, naysayer mentality came Scopely and Supercell and King.com and Zynga.
you know, $100+ billion in revenue because the big players said this is not a real thing and it doesn't work. Again, there's so many parallels. History is perfectly consistent on this point. And like I said, you know, we're not deterred by this. We've seen this show before. We know how it ends. And there will be new companies that emerge as, you know, the groups that kind of aren't risk averse and lead the way. And we look forward to being part of that.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Michael. I think we'll see something similar here where we might have like a breakout hit as a casual game. You know, it may not be like a hardcore game because it has to be from a studio that can move really fast, that's forward thinking. I don't think it's going to come out of a big company, personally.
Yeah, well, and Shane, you bring up a good point. What's really interesting is if you look at like Farmville or you look at Candy Crush, you look at some of these really iconic games in free-to-play, thinking, well, it's just a casual game, right? But you've got literally women, you know, over 40 playing 6 hours a day, 7 hours a day. That's a hardcore gamer mentality, right? It might be a casual game mechanic, but it's very much a hardcore gamer mentality. And these kind of movements inspire that kind of behavior. Now, whether you say it's healthy or not is, you know, another show for another topic or another topic for another show at another time. But we have passionate consumers of content and we like to allow them to kind of, you know, do what they want to do in the worlds that they love to do them in.
Yeah, I just think the infrastructure has to evolve to get there, right? So wallet UX has to get better, getting access to assets has to get easier. And we're getting very close to that, right? We're getting super close to that. So I think maybe the next bull would be ripe for something like this.
Can I ask you guys a question? Can I just jump in and ask you guys a question?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so, no, it's all good. All good. So just to back to the point you're making about how the big game studios 10 years ago said, you know, free to play mobile, like that's ridiculous. We're just going to keep making, you know, our AAA legacy games. Like, and I like the point you're making about, you know, you got women 40 plus playing 6 hours a day. They've never done that. Nobody in gaming has ever been able to make that happen. But that's also like really platform centric. That wasn't possible until everybody had a smartphone. And only once everybody actually had the device that they'd do it. And, you know, you could probably argue the same thing for the internet in the 90s, where it's like, well, there's only so much value in having one family computer, you know, on a 56K connection. Only so many people are going to care about the internet when your mom needs to receive a fax. You have to stop doing whatever you're doing, right? So I feel like a lot of those advances are platform centric. So what do you guys think is the platform for this? Like, what is going to be the platform that makes it easy for people to not just use these applications, but also for developers to build them, right? Because right now, you could argue that in some cases, it's relatively easy to build stuff. And you have a lot of the L1s, L2s, like rolling out these massive funds, being like, please come build here. So, and a lot of tools, even for me as a no-code creator, to deploy tons of fun projects. But what is going to be the platform that the 40-plus-year-old women are going to spend 6 hours on in Web3 gaming? Like, what is it going to be on their phone? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I do. And if you look at free-to-play, actually started on Facebook, right, in 2009. So it wasn't an iPhone, right? It wasn't a mobile device. It was a social network where they were, and they were looking for things to do, right? And there was this whole notion around virality, like, hey, help me build my barn. It takes 8 of your friends to click the yes button, and it's in your newsfeed. And so that really was kind of the movement. I think the thing, Luke, I think you raise a good point. I think the thing that we look at is it's about accessibility. And so, you know, the Wax Cloud wallet has 15 million unique active wallet addresses because we have a very Web2 interface, right? We have 10 different SSOs that sit at the front of the wallet creation. There's no fee to create the wallet. And so when they see things that they're used to, oh, Facebook Connect is all I need to create a wallet. That's easy. I don't have to go watch a MetaMask video. No. And we don't talk about NFTs as NFTs, you know, explicitly. We talk about digital asset ownership. So it's about giving them things that they're comfortable with, right? Things that they're used to, things that are approachable, like, oh, I know what this is, or I recognize this, or I feel safe here, or this is easy to use. That kind of frictionless kind of onboarding acceptance with a little bit of education sprinkled in, all of a sudden it's like, you know, you have a wallet. No, I don't. Well, you create an account, right? That's not a wallet. Yeah, it is. The wallet created your account. We don't call it a wallet. We say it's an account creation. So again, speaking to them in terms that are comfortable and familiar, not scary. You know, the reality is, you know, most blockchain protocols, sort of, you know, Bitcoin notwithstanding, right, are they're carbon neutral or carbon negative. Like, in this whole notion around, oh, NFTs are ruining the world and dots, like, it's all erroneous and it's really kind of harmful. But these companies are saying these things because they don't know how to build in the space. They want to keep their customers in the lanes and they don't want to share the revenue, which is a really, really important part, right? Revenue sharing is a huge deal. The creators, the artists, the people who, you know, craft, trade, get these things, you know, they have to have a fiat off ramp. They have to have that utility and that kind of, you know, that motivation.
This
will really change the world once people understand that.
Michael, that kind of takes me back to Flow and the Top Shot. I mean, it really did onboard a whole bunch of people. I think it was almost a victim of its own success. Don't you think, Luke? It was just so good that people started seeing these things as investments. You know what I mean?
I think it's an interesting way of looking at it. I don't know if it's necessarily it's a victim of success. I think it's more a victim of the hype around it.
Yeah.
But to what you're saying, you know, NBA Top Shot kind of proved that if you create this incredible user experience, you can create this platform, kind of like what LG was sort of getting to, where you have it so easy to use. You put in an email, you have a credit card, and then that's it. You're collecting and you're off to the races, right? I think that's kind of shown that if you do that, you can bring in hundreds of thousands of users. It started this entire NFT kind of craze and ballroom, right? And I don't know what the next thing would be. I don't think any of us did. If any of us knew, we wouldn't be in this call right now, we'd be working on that thing. But I think it's clear that it can be out of anywhere, effectively, right? Whether it's someone builds another collectible platform that's amazing, whether it's someone solves an infrastructure problem, whether it's whatever. But ultimately, it's going to need an incredible user experience. People are going to be able to sign up, sign on, get started, buy these NFTs without having to even worry about wallet or account. Like, if I agree with what Michael's saying, that we need to kind of talk in their language. But what's even better is we abstract that away completely and we just say, sign up with an email address. Don't even worry about it. And that's something that we've been working a lot on the Flow side, creating walletless onboarding so that people can sign up with an email address, collect these NFTs, not even have to think about owning keys, not even have to think about the ownership side of it until they're ready. And then when they're ready, they can turn that wallet they have that's like an app custody wallet into a self-custody wallet. And then they can really get into the ownership and the true Web3 tenants and all that aspect. And personally, I think that's going to be essential for the next bull run, because anyone who wants to get into NFTs for the pure, I want to own crypto and be decentralized, is probably already here. So the next wave of people that are going to get into it, they're not going to come for the decentralization anarchist kind of mindset. They're going to come for the like, hey, this better be cooler than Facebook. And I don't think right now we're there. I think that's kind of like what LG and Michael are both saying, is whatever comes next needs to be cool and needs to be easy to use. And it needs to bloody do something. That's kind of my two cents.
Yeah, you know, you raise a really interesting point. So Alex Ohanian, who's a huge Web3 kind of believer, about a year and a half ago, I want to say, released a series of PFPs for Reddit, right? And everybody's like, oh, I want my new PFP. They gave away like 4 or 5 million of them. They were all NFTs. Like, those people didn't realize it, right? And those people were very anti-NFT, anti-Web3, anti-crypto. But all of a sudden, here you've got mass adoption of something they didn't know what they were getting. They just knew they wanted that thing. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not so bad after all. I mean, a real interesting kind of thought experiment. It's like, oh, by the way, did you realize you now own an NFT? No, I don't. I hate NFTs. Well, look at your PFP, dude.
And Huda, those were on Polygon, right?
They were on Polygon. Exactly. Yeah. And that idea, though, of people signing up for whatever platform and not realizing it's an NFT, I can't believe it, but that is kind of here. I mean, it's just starting to bubble up, at least, where that's becoming more common in projects and in platforms. I believe when I signed up for NFL Rivals, I mean, just an email address. I don't think I had to sign up with or create a wallet. And I think the players there aren't even engaged with NFTs till they go to sell something. Similarly, on Avalanche, there's a new art platform that I signed up for. And the same thing, I signed up for it and minted my own NFT just by logging in with my Gmail account. So like everyone's saying here, that is essential. And that's what the next bull run will look like again, whenever that comes. But it's great to see in the bear market, just little signs and little building blocks. Actually, they're big building blocks, but seeing them actually starting to fit in this puzzle now.
I think I think the casual user, the mainstream kind of user, they don't have this allegiance to, you know, certain ecosystems and chains like, you know, some of us kind of core people are. So I think the best platform ever created is the internet, right? It just enables anyone to come and build. And we're kind of moving to a world where I think that's going to happen with blockchains, right? You're seeing multiple L2s launch, you're seeing a lot of interoperability happen, right? So hopefully we'll just have the interchain where users just come and use the product and they care about the product as opposed to, you know, what ecosystem they're in. And I think we're close to getting there.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if you could only use the internet, if you could only use Netscape or Mosaic back in the day, like you'd have a real limited number of users, right? We believe in a cross-chain world, a cross-wallet world. It's going to be, you know, people on the internet, they like that they show up and their stuff works, right? Like you literally have to make it that simple. Like, and that's what we're working to get towards. And so I absolutely believe what you're saying, Shane, 100%. Yeah, you know, I hope we get there sooner rather than later.
We're kind of like in the phase back when our mom used to pick up the phone and the internet line dropped, right? Like, so that's the phase we're in right now for NFTs.
Mom, I'm on a bulletin board. Hang up.
Exactly.
I got to say, by the way, I love to hear people who work on specific chains, like on Wax, that you're open to this broader idea of the assets moving between chains, that your assets really are interoperable and maybe ultimately the blockchain doesn't matter. I mean, maybe a ton. I really always wondered that how people felt if there was that, I don't know, the camaraderie and the willingness to work together. And it sounds like it is there.
Yeah, we love Urbit Gold and the people over at Polygon. We love our friend, you know, Robbie and Immutable. Like, we love all their chains and we want to see them all win because we feel like it's a rising tide. And I will tell you, we changed our name to Tirano Studios as opposed to Wax Studios because when we went to go talk to people, like, oh, we thought you built exclusively for Wax. Like, no, we build content for everybody everywhere. We have, you know, NFT bridges to Polygon and to Binance and to Ethereum. Like, we very much believe in a cross-chain world. We think utility on Wax is the best way to go, but that's, of course, that's what we believe. But, you know, liquidity should be everywhere. And at some point, these things should be completely interoperable and interchangeable.
I think what's really important there as well, because I super agree, and I think Shane, you kind of hit on this, like users just don't give a F about it. I self-censored there just for your video editors, right? But like, I've never met a casual user, like someone who's not deep in this space that wouldn't be listening to this call. I've never met a casual collector or individual that's been like, oh, what blockchain is it on? That's only something we ask in our inner circles. Like, they just don't care. And I think bridges and creating this cross liquidity and a world where someone can just have, like we said, an email account and just collect and buy and engage across all these different chains is going to be essential. Like, we're not going to get mass adoption if we stay in our tribes and we maintain a tribal mentality. And I think that's probably what we need to prepare for any future bull run, is just more cross-chain interoperability. Like, the amount of level twos, level ones is just so confusing to your average person that it's going to be the biggest friction point once we've solved, you know, wallets onboarding on every chain. Then it's going to be like, well, why do I have to create 10 different accounts when I just want to do two different things? It doesn't make sense to users.
I'm going to agree, but also challenge that a little bit, Luke, where I agree that that's the mentality that's needed, but I don't agree that that's the mentality that's there. I think companies and venture studios who are trying to build out the space, they have that mentality, but I don't think any L1s or L2s have that mentality. I think it's clear every single L2 out there is in an absolute knife fight to get as many brands, as many users, to incentivize developers to build on their chain exclusively. And then on the front end being like, but hey, you can bridge other places. But it's like those, the stuff that's the most well-funded right now, that has the most longevity for funding, are the chains that are trying to make people use their chain and trying to, I think a lot of the L2s and L1s don't see this as a wag me, like one day we're going to have this interoperable system where everybody can just use cross chain and the user will never notice. I think everybody sees it as, hey, we're all competing to be the Kleenex of the space, where like literally nobody will ever say the names of the other types of Kleenex companies. They will only ever say Kleenex. Or even like, if you guys remember 20 years ago, DVD versus DVD plus versus Blu-ray, and it was like, who's gonna win, who's gonna be the standard that everybody adopts, and then it was Blu-ray that won. And I think that is like, if I'm running you know, the Polygon fund or the Flow fund or the Arbitrum or whatever, that is 100% the mentality that I would be approaching it with, is this is a rat race and I need to win. And when people say, hey, I'm using my blank, like, I'm gonna, oh, have you tried out, why don't you connect with my, and the end of that sentence, they absolutely want it to be my Polygon or my whatever, you know, like, I think that that's absolutely the race that's going on right now. And everybody's playing nice so that when they win, the others capitulate and join their chain.
Wow. Okay. Just love having that take there.
Spicy, right?
This is all venture backed stuff, man. Venture backed stuff is a winner take all. You know what I mean? Like, it's one company, you know, sure, so many companies can win, but
There is a good silver lining that comes out of that, Luke. It's like there is a winner take all, and it has to have that sort of incentive for the winner so that they put their best stuff out there. Like Wax is putting their best stuff out there. Flow is, Stargaze is, like whoever can solve that problem the best. I mean, there is an incentive for that, but, there are shared values, I guess, that we all sort of have in this space. And I think that's where the collaboration comes from. Back in the EOS days when I used to be with them too, in their community, they talked about collaboration. It was like a collaboration and a competition at the same time. I don't know if you guys heard that before.
Co-opetition, yeah. yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why Stargaze is built as an app chain is because it can interoperate, it could bridge to many other chains, and we're working on bridging from Ethereum, bridging from Solana, bridging from EVM chains, and you bring up a really good point, Luke. So I think it's still, the battle is still out there. I don't think it's clear which direction we're going to go yet.
Well, yeah, and I guess I wonder the greater question, does it have to be a direction? I actually do believe in a cross-chain world. I look at just selfishly my own kind of world of gaming, right? And there are, depending on what you believe, there's kind of 40 to 50 million in aggregate gaming wallets that have been created across every chain. Now you can say that's, you know, half bots or not. I don't know how many real players there are, but I will tell you, every kind of, you know, independent third party group will tell you there's about 3.2 billion real gamers in the world that play games every single day. And that's 3.2 billion is a lot, right? It's, you know, what, 40% of the Earth's population. And yet we have like 40 to 50 million wallet accounts. Like that's not mass adoption. Those probably aren't real players. And so now you have, you know, multiple protocols fighting for that kind of lion's share of, you know, that really, really, really small, you know, demographic. And that's a path to nowhere. Doesn't matter how well funded you are, doesn't matter how great your content is. Like if you have a friction filled, you know, security concerning chain is down kind of world that you live in with surge pricing and, you know, if you know, things aren't immediate, like if it doesn't feel like it's, you know, consumer web friendly or web 2.0, like it doesn't matter, right? Like you need great content that's easy to get to, like full stop. And if you're limited anyway, and people are kind of fighting over, you know, the scraps, like that's just not going to scale. So we take a step back and say, so we have a game called Blockchain Brawlers. People say, oh, it's a great blockchain game. I don't want it to be a great blockchain game. I just want it to be a great game. Like that's where we come at this thing from. Like we're competing with people's free time, right? Mm-hmm. We're competing with their entertainment choices, Netflix, mobile game, console game, what have you. Like to say you're the best, you know, Web3 game, it's kind of like, you know, it's like being the tallest short person, right? Like it's not great. And we want to be great, and we want to be objectively great, not relatively great. And so we can't do that unless we get a lot of people in. We can't get a lot of people in unless we remove all these barriers and educate and dot, 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 dot. So I think that's where we see the world, and that kind of informs a lot of our thinking. But look, Luke, I think you make some really good points. And I think that's kind of the challenge for the industry is how do we take these built-in, you know, prejudices that are working against us? And how do we convince people that ownership, utility, open, permissionless, trustless kind of future is the future that you want to be a part of? And that's really kind of the challenge.
I love the analogy of tallest of the short people. I'm gonna use that. That I love that. That's so good.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. It's like, how do we show them? And I think honestly, we show them by just building it and leading it. Like for example, to LG's point, we can all talk about interoperability, but if we don't actually live it, does it really matter? And I think the lack of composability across the ecosystem is problematic. Like the fact that, you know, like even within this room, I can have NFTs on Wax, I can't use them on like Flow, or I've got NFTs on Flow, but then what am I going to do when I want to use them on Solana or Polygon to whatever. Like I think we'd have to solve that interoperability issue, because then what it unlocks is not just the easier user experience, it unlocks a world of new building and new composability that just isn't out there right now. I think when you think about it in like 5-10 years time, you should be able to take a top shot NFT and use it across the ecosystem. Like that just makes sense to me. And I think we all agree that would unlock a new level of gaming, of user experiences, of collecting that we just don't see right now. And until we do that, I think LG has a point that it's more or less lip service. But what I can say is that I know people are building that stuff. I can't speak for every chain, but you know, on the Flow side, we see more and more work towards composability and interoperability happening on a month-to-month basis. You know, bridges of doodles from ETH to Flow, for example, is one very obvious big name example, but it's only just a start. And I think in 2 years' time, by end of 2025, you won't be an NFT project on one chain. I don't think that's going to be like, I mean, that's going to be the very minority of NFT projects. I think every NFT project is going to be exploring being on multiple chains. And when all the individual projects doing it, when all the VC-backed projects start doing it, then we enter that world of true interoperability. But, you know, hopefully that's what happens. Or LG's right, and it's all just a knife fight to be the number one. I don't see it at the moment, but who knows, right? Maybe everyone is just playing lip service.
Well, I think just to add a bit more context to my point too, is I think if you look at the history, even some of the stuff we've been talking about in terms of Web 1, Web 2, inevitably it comes down to, you know, the winners are the ones who build a platform that other people can build stuff on, right? So it's like even Web 1, you could argue is the browser war. At the end of the day, sure, you know, people were using computers or whatever, but inevitably what ended up happening is you had Netscape and Internet Explorer, and everybody's seen that chart where it's like they lose market share, Chrome launches, just basically eats everybody alive. And then the other ones just kind of fight for the scraps with Mozilla, right? So, and for Web 2, it's kind of the same thing where it's like those turned out to be social networks or operating systems, where it's like that was the huge trick. Like, that's why you don't talk about MySpace and BlackBerry anymore, is that they were the first ones, or not the first ones, but the first ones to do it well. And then somebody took exactly what they were doing and did it 10 times better. And you never heard about those companies again, you know, with iOS and with something like Facebook. So I think for this, it's like, I'm not really sure what the initial version is of this whole space. You could say maybe it's like Ethereum, just the mainnet, but maybe also Bitcoin. It's financialized, so it's a little bit more convoluted. But what I'm saying is that inevitably, I think when we talk about, you know, onboarding and people making it really easy to refer each other to the game they're playing or the thing they're using, like it was for Facebook, I think inevitably that is going to have to be on a platform that is incredibly easy to use. And that platform, I think, is, we don't know what that the medium of that platform is yet. It could be a chain. It could be a wallet. Like, I really think the term wallet is something that's going to change a lot in the next 10 years, the same way that the term phone did for the last 15 years, right? So like your wallet might be the thing that becomes your Web3, you know, ID, and that's the most important thing. And everything has to just bend to the wallet that is the wallet, that is not chain agnostic, and everybody has to build around that. I don't know. So that's kind of what I'm saying, is that inevitably it's going to be really hard. Like, you guys are right. Nobody's going to say like, hey, so what chain are you on? I'm on this chain. No one's going to care about those things because those aren't interesting. They're not consumer friendly applications. They let other people make great applications. So I think that's more so my point, is that inevitably when the Web3 space really matures and you have, you know, 500 million daily active users in it, what will the Facebook be, and what will that be, a wallet or a chain or a browser or some other, you know, permutation that we haven't really thought of yet?
Yeah, I think what may end up happening is that, like, you know, Facebook is still built on the internet, right? So the chain becomes the internet, it becomes the infrastructure. And then what happens is now we have, you know, Apple and Android, right? And back in the day we had, I guess, IBM and Apple, right? So whatever the future wallet is going to be, we might have two or three of them, and people might make the same game on each platform. That could be another kind of outcome of this.
Yeah, there was like somebody had mentioned BlackBerry before, and I don't know if you guys saw that recent movie. It's out. They just did a remake of the story behind there, and Mike Lazardis, who was the engineer. Like, he was, when the iPhone came out, he was like, what the hell is this? It doesn't have a keyboard, you know? And that was his thing. Like, he really was hoping that users would love that keyboard and not want to give that up. And he was just wrong about it. And I just wonder what some of our ecosystems are wrong about, you know, in the future. So just keep that in mind. But we did hear a lot about use cases so far. The use cases for NFTs are definitely out there. That's not going away. The technology is real. It's good. And gaming is one. Tickets and ticketing is another. Where do you guys feel like the use cases that are not going away are? Like, which industries do you think those are in?
I think. Look, I think tickets is obvious. I think obviously gaming is, makes a ton of sense. But the thing that I think that I would expect to see mass adoption tied to affinity programs, right? So you have your affinity program, your NFT tied to that. Everything is stored in there. It's a programmable key, effectively an NFT, and like everything is like you're going. You used to carry around, you know, your membership card, like, oh, here's my, you know, American Airlines membership card. Please make sure I get my points and scan this when I fly. Like, that's all like, that's there. And people are used to having something like that tied to it. And now it's like, well, maybe it's an app, maybe it isn't. But what if your wallet just held all your NFTs tied to affinity programs? You could always look up sort of what they were and where they were going. Like, we hear a lot of brands, AMC, Sony, Marvel, that come to us all the time and talk about how can we utilize the Web3 technology with our existing customer base to inspire loyalty. NASCAR, a great example as well. We're talking to them, and we always talk to them about kind of more and more kind of consumer rewards tied to, you know, the NFT that they possess in their wallet. And I think you're going to see a lot of proliferation of kind of Web3 kind of features and products in that avenue. In fact, I'm 99.5% positive that that's going to be a thing that gets blown out in the next few years.
Is anyone doing that right now? I want to say Starbucks might be dabbling in it with those stamps that they do, but I'm not 100% sure. But has anybody actually delivered an excellent rewards program as an NFT yet? Because it seems like the obvious thing, like you mentioned, like it's the perfect use case.
Well, they haven't swapped. I'll tell you our AMC movie theater and Sony Pictures example that we did in December of last year when Spider-Man came out. They wanted to go to all their affinity members and do a random airdrop of a Spider-Man visual, right? And there was like six different visuals and each one had a mint number. And so you wanted to get a high mint or a low mint of a really beautiful piece of art. And that became a tradable thing. And one of them sold on our chain when in the middle of the bear market, one of them sold for like $17,000, was everybody surprised by something that somebody got for free that made AMC excited, that made Sony excited, that made the customer base excited. Now that wasn't the affinity program, but if you were in the AMC affinity program, you got this airdropped if you signed up and took part in it. So we see these kind of threads connecting these experiences that are successful, that are great consumer experiences that generate earned media. Like, it's all the things that the brands want. Like, oh, look at this positive consumer experience. And wasn't this incredible? And this was next gen. And look at us, we're cutting edge. We're, you know, leading the way. Like, those are all the things that they want to say. Like, you're a movie theater company. It's like, no, we're cutting edge and we're tech. And we're like, they want to be seen as cool. Now it's, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of things like that. That at some point it's like, yeah, of course my affinity program is an NFT, is NFT based now, right? It's just going to be seem so obvious in a year or two when we look back and it's like, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that they're not already fully built out, that we don't have any like great examples of it. And I wonder, like, were some brands turned off by the craze they saw mostly around PFPs? Like, was that a turnoff for them where they didn't pursue it? They didn't go any further because NFTs, well, I guess the ones that were representing the space, some of them weren't really the best look.
I don't know if it's that as much, to be honest. So I big agree on the value of affinity programs being as NFTs. But I think the problem is if we try and say, hey, normally they use an app, let's just make it an NFT, we're adding work without real reason. So I think the approach needs to be not like, how do we rebuild what already exists, but as NFTs, but how do NFTs allow this to be something different? So for example, we have the UFC Strike program, platform on Flow, sorry, and they have the Champions Club program, which is basically an affinity program for UFC fans where they get like free tickets to games, they get to meet athletes, they get to go to behind the scenes things, they get all these experiences that are great for UFC fans if they own a certain, like a very rare tier UFC NFT, or what they call a moment on the Strike platform. And so it's effectively what Michael's describing, but without being the same as what you'd see in Web 2, just now it's Web 3. What they've done is they say you have to own this video highlight, and this video highlight is really cool, and you can do stuff with it on its own, like use it in a fantasy game or trade it or whatever. But by owning it, you also get access to all this stuff. And I think that's what affinity programs need to do. And my personal feeling is that when a Web 2 company comes along and tries to just rebuild what they have, but on chain, without adding any of that extra coolness, any of that extra composability, it's always going to fail, because what's the point, right? Like, we can't just turn, you know, closed databases into public databases and expect users to be excited about it. We need to add that extra value where it makes sense. So if you can be an affinity member for like your airline, like you fly from American Airlines and now it's an NFT, other companies then providing value to you because of that NFT you own is how that affinity program then makes sense. Like, if I fly American Airlines all the time, right now I build points, I can only spend them on American Airlines.
if those points were tokens that went to my wallet that holds the NFT for my membership card, and then, you know, another company offered me a discount for using my points, then it's like, holy smokes, like that makes sense. But I think, like, that's to Michael's point, I agree with it, but we need to see it go further.
Do you think just having the ability to trade your membership isn't enough? I would argue it is. I actually think it would be like, okay, for example, I logged into my Taco Bell app. My prices are like so much higher than my son who orders from Taco Bell. It seems like every day that's a reward he gets from ordering through the app. They're just cheaper. But him being able to trade his membership to somebody, I actually think that's super valuable and something I'd love to see. But again, is that enough for these membership, you know, affinity programs? Or is it like you're saying, do they need to go a little deeper with their mechanics and their systems, you know, to make it viable?
I think it depends, right? Like in the Taco Bell example, if your son, by the way, stop eating Taco Bell every day. I'm not trying to call you out as dad. What are you playing at, mate, right? But if your son can send you it and you can use it, that's great. But it's really like he might as well just bought it for you. So again, like if I open up Uber Eats and I have a discount because I'm whatever premium, I can just order food for my friend and he just give me the cash. Like it's a little bit more work, but it's probably just the same amount of work as transferring an NFT, right? So like, I think it's not enough on its own because you can replicate that already. We need to find something that you just can't do if it wasn't NFT. So I think if you could transfer it, but there was also, you know, you could track the history of it, and maybe the more you send it, the more points that occur and there's some sort of benefits there, stuff like that. But I don't think it's enough on its own.
But it is a great starting point, right?
Great starting point.
It's an incredible starting point.
Yeah, I think one advantage of having affinity programs on chain is that it's composable, right? So let's say a brand wants to do an airdrop or something to an owner of one of these passes, like that's one use case. That's something you can do if this is just like running on a database in a centralized company, right? So that's the kind of stuff you had to think about, like all the novel stuff you can build on top of it, things that you can't do right now in the real world.
Yeah, I think about like affinity programs similar to games. Like the more engaged I am in a game, the more value I have. Now I may not get dollar for dollar for it, but I get something for it. Right. And right now games retain players because out of guilt. Well, I spent $5,000 in World of Warcraft. I can't quit now. Like, no, you're still having fun. No, I'm so pot committed. I can't quit. Like, boy, the thing that I love as a gamer is like, I can get 10 cents on the dollar and it's something, it's not zero. So from an affinity program, if I'm super engaged and I'm not going to fly anymore because I am disabled or I've just decided to settle in or whatever, like I've got, you know, 3 million American Airlines miles. So I could just sell to somebody my account or my NFT, I could sell it to them and just be done with it. Like that's a, like I said, a great, I think, foundation. You know, my favorite NFT as a ticket program is this lifetime VIP pass to Coachella, right? Which they auctioned off 10 of them, I want to say, and they sold like 500,000 a piece. But imagine owning something for the rest of your life that got you access to all the parties, backstage, every event, stagecoach. Like it's just this huge, amazing thing that you use for a certain amount of time. And then when you're done using it, because, you know, let's face it, you know, I'm not exactly the Coachella demo anymore. I can then send it to somebody else or I can sell it to somebody else. Like that kind of links to affinity and engagement and retention and reward and ownership. And it's all about giving the individual control. Like you can't sell your game account. You'll get banned forever by Epic, right? But boy, if I could sell these assets, that would make me feel good about wanting to spend more with you and make me want to engage more with you because you understand my plight. You're not putting me in this walled garden that I cannot escape from. And so I think there's a lot of things like that. I don't know what the exact paradigms and features would be, but I think it's a great starting point to give players control if they engage. And that's the thing that I love about affinity programs. The more, it used to be the more money I spent with you, the more better you would treat me. But I think it's going to get to a point where it's the more time I spend with you, right? Because my free time is my most valuable commodity I have in my entire life. Like I have very little free time. If I spend it with your brand or your game or your content, recognize that and reward that, please, because a lot of people are competing for my attention.
I feel like you brought up some good points there, Michael, the control, the freedom that people have to be able to trade. Now, I want to bring up another term that has plagued, I guess, a lot of companies in our space, which is sustainability. One of the things that we found is like, yes, you can give away an NFT, but does it come with the expectation of all these unlimited rewards forever, right? Like, that's just not the case. And we've seen some companies go out of business because they just can't keep up with expectations of the holders. How do we make this into a business model that is sustainable?
Is that for me? I mean, I'll tell you that I think a lot of companies that came into this business didn't look at kind of trying to create an equilibrium or trying to create scarcity or trying to understand value. If you look at assets, you look at Color of Title or Provenance and things that kind of have plagued the art world, that's very much where the NFT world needs to go. But it's kind of without longevity in mind. I don't think there's a lot of future proofing that goes on in a lot of these rooms that do strat planning and do product planning and figure out live operations and what is their roadmap. They're like, hey, there's this new thing and it's cool and let's take advantage of it. It's a digital green wave. And there's not a lot of forethought that goes kind of beyond that. So I don't have a great answer for you other than I've seen a lot of things that I read it and I see the hype and I see prices and values. I'm like, the emperor has no clothes. And at some point there's going to be a moment of reconciliation. People go, that was stupid. Why do we do that? Like, we never want to like do anything that is, you know, obviously dumb. And we do want to move the kind of the narrative forward, but I don't know what the answer is. And I think that's what we're all scratching at here is somebody's going to figure it out. And every single failure is going to lead to that success because you learn more through failures, we know. And so we're just going to continue to stub our toe and touch stoves to see if they're hot. And we're going to build that scar tissue. And at some point we're like, oh, here's the paradigm. And then everybody's going to, you know, follow that approach, whether it's us or somebody else. So,
okay. Well, I mean, this stuff is still so very new, right? And everyone's kind of in the growth phase now and everyone's thinking about growth and how to bring in more users and stuff like that, right? Like, if you look at Amazon, they didn't turn on profit. They like operated, without a profit for the first 15 years, right? And I think right now everyone should be just trying to grow as much as possible, and sustainability and business models and stuff like that will come after the growth phase.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, Jeff Bezos always said, I'm going to be shopping on the internet. That's what Amazon's going to be. But on day one, we're going to sell books and that's it. We're only going to sell books. We're going to do it unbelievably well. He's like, we are so hyper-focused on doing this one thing and we're going to learn from it and build infrastructure and all this stuff. And then books had a similar footprint to videotapes, and videotapes became CDs and CDs became DVDs. And like, it's just this real obvious kind of growth path, but you can't try to boil the ocean, right? And so you do one thing unbelievably well. And for us, that's trying to onboard new customers into a world where they feel safe and secure and they understand how to operate. It's not like, let's figure out how to make them as much money as soon as possible. That's, you know, that's foolhardy. Like that's not the right approach. We're just trying to get acceptance, you know, and broad adoption, because that's really the limiting factor for us.
What you guys are saying is that we can learn a lot from the founders of Local Lizards or all the thousands of NFPs that PFPs that came out the last few years.
Go on. I was just going to say that. In a way, that makes me feel better about all the craziness around PFPs, right? They're just there playing with the tools and playing with these new systems. And it is just seeing what we can learn from them. And along the way, just incrementally building. And it's happened for sure.
Well, I think it's like you could pull out 20 to 30 big PFP projects that have contributed some serious and significant advancement of the space as well. Whether it's the latest kind of thought leadership on what we should be focused on, or whether it's literal infrastructure and tooling that then helps everyone else, right? Like, that's the beauty of blockchain. If someone builds a bridge, others can use it in theory, right? If someone builds an oracle, others can use it. And so I think whilst not all of the projects have done that, certainly enough of them have to help drive that innovation to the next level. I mean, we've talked a lot about onboarding new users, and I think it's essential that anyone who's trying to survive in the space does that. But you also need to focus on the current users, right? Like, word of mouth is going to be one of the biggest factors in the next growth period, right? We can't have mainstream adoption if people that are already here aren't happy, if people that are already here aren't enjoying the process. So I think that as much as we want to focus on just bringing in new users, we also have to focus on making sure the current ecosystem, the current community, and the current collectors are all like engaged and happy and having like a really fun time. And that's also going to be a huge growth lever as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Bob Iger says you kind of operate the business you're in, but you also want to build for the business you want to be in, right? So you kind of straddle the future versus the current. And I think there's a challenge with the current audience in that a lot of them are very ROI motivated. And that's, they're like, people come to me all the time, I'm an investor in your game. I'm like, no, you're not. You're a player in my game. No, I'm an investor. I'm like, well, I don't look at you that way. And yet you want to be looked at that way. I don't know how to reconcile that fact. I will tell you that if you stay here, you'll have a good time and you'll own a lot of stuff that you can sell if you want to. And that's kind of my goal. And that's what motivates me. And at some point we get enough people in and we manage scarcity and we increase utility, it's all going to work out. And you either believe that or you don't. And I think that if, and another thing I, I think kind of I map to in terms of what my behaviors, my decisions are, is that you can spend a lot of time trying to convince people who don't like what you have that it's the right way, or you can lean into the people who love what you do, right? And really kind of doubling down and tripling down on people who believe what you believe, which is a really important point of alignment of beliefs. Like, you're going to get way more kind of return on your time and your investment opposed to trying to flip the naysayers. Like, that is a really hard battle to fight and to win. And it's like, great, you convinced a lot of people who didn't, you know, like what you're already doing that it was good enough. Instead of saying the people that you love, make them love you even more is a much easier conversation to have. And so I think that's how I choose to look at it. The current kind of early adopters can be, you know, can lead, you know, if you look at sort of the diffusion curve of innovation, kind of that early adopter cohort is really important. But you got to cross the chasm of from early adopter and innovator to kind of, you know, mass majority. And how do you cross that chasm of that kind of that 12% of your audience you're going to get no matter what? How do you get to 40, 50, 60%? That's really the challenge. And there's a lot of economists and brand builders who can tell you how to do that. I'm not one of them, but I appreciate that that's an exercise that, you know, I'd like to engage in.
Well, guys, I wanted to ask and go around the room for the last segment here. I wanted to ask every one of you, like, what are you guys excited about in the NFT space? And kind of like a lead on to that is like, what are you building? So maybe let's start with Luke, LG, you know, since he's got a nice perspective there.
What am I building?
What are you building, and also kind of what are you excited for?
Kind of hard to answer that. I'm pointed in the direction of community, and I don't mean that as like the really overused key term that it is in the space. I mean it in the way that, you know, we've talked about all these platforms and all these unlocks. Inevitably, the internet has worked for two reasons. One, it has, you know, made a lot of things really convenient, like Amazon, you know, made buying super easy. And the other, you know, and streamlined information, so you can prove facts now way faster, and many other things. And the other is that people have been able to find other people like them in the world. And that started, you know, way back in chat forums. And I still think the most basic form of the internet is just a chat room. You know, that's what people, like, even despite all this technology, the main question is still, what's your Discord? How many people you got in there? What's going on in there? Oh, this project's Discord's dead. The project is dead, right? That's a death sentence of Discord, that nothing, where nothing happens. And especially your big project doing stuff. So I think, not necessarily, but you get what I'm saying. So I'm pointed more in the direction of, how are you enabling people with similar interests to accrue their value together, right? Like, these days, you know, that's what started happening with Web2, is that, you know, once the news started to quote Twitter and you had things like Arab Spring and Me Too movement, that was like a huge coming out moment for social media of like, hey, the people are actually causing something. The people are massing online and they are making active change. And now with the financialization of communities, which is basically what Web3 is to an extent, I'm really excited for that. I'm excited for, you know, where do I gather? Not just with other people who hold my top shots, but with people who hold NBA tokens or like Toronto Raptors moments or tokens in my case, people who have collected all those types of assets online and are just fans of the medium, that it's like, we love the Raptors, we love this kind of gamified collecting that we're doing across all facets. Where do I mass with them in a way where we can not exchange value with the platforms and the brands, but create value on our own, as a community, like a community garden of fans, right? Where it's like, we're going to plant our own stuff and make our own stuff, and that's what's going to work. And that's almost more like a subreddit, where subreddits are powerful now, right? And they develop their own rules and they have their own self-governance. And I think that that's really great. So that to me is where I'm pointed at. And I love any projects that are either building stuff that those communities can use, or being open to community feedback or whatever that looks like. I think it's, you know, the decentralization aspect is going to be a power to the people, but not as like one big mass, but as individual communities. And yeah, that's my general take. That's largely what takes up my brain space every day right now. Also, because I don't work in any major platforms. I don't work for brand. I don't you know, work for I'm not trying to develop you know, code or anything like that right now. I work with people.
Yeah, thanks for that, LG. Actually, let's think about doing an event together for NFT Day, since we're based around the same area. I think the other Luke on this call could probably provide us some fun. So
here we go. What's NFT Day? What is NFT Day? I actually don't know.
LG definitely knows. LG's just teeing me up. He's not even a good actor. There is an event in Vancouver that's happening that should be pretty fun. I'll send you guys the detail. I mean, look, I'll jump in and answer this question because it's very nicely segued. Like, you guys are professionals. I mean, so I am very excited for the core community kind of continuing to grow, even if that growth is slow. Because when you get someone, like all of us in here, we're not going anywhere. Doesn't matter what bear market happens over the next 6 months. It doesn't matter how long it takes to get to a bull market. Like, we're all clearly in this space. And I think that's what's nice, is that the noise is kind of gone in a bear market. And everyone you talk to who's like, hey, I'm going to spend 50 hours of my week working on this thing, you know they're not here to make a quick buck. You know they're not here just to like be gone as soon as things start turning, because they're still here. And that's kind of exciting, because that amount of people in the crypto space is now bigger than it's ever been. And you can look at the history of the ups and downs of the crypto market. Every time there's a down period, people start leaving, but the amount of people that stay gets slightly bigger. And I think it's fun because it feels like there's enough people here that we can still build pretty significant stuff during this bear market without this noise. And I agree with what LG's saying around community, but I also think there's this kind of this space now where the bear market could continue for years, but we can still put out a lot of great stuff. There's still enough people here that projects can launch and succeed, even though we're in a bear. And I'm not trying to take away. I know some people might hear this and be like, yeah, but my NFTs are down, my tokens are down, whatever it is. Like, I get that, but it's still better than it would have been 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 8 years ago, right? When 2017 or 2018, when there was a bear market then, NFTs were basically nothing. The total height of NFT users was probably the equivalent of what we get now during the bear. And so that's kind of exciting to see that growth. And one of the things that I'm working on is the NFT Day, which is basically trying to help encourage that growth no matter what the market conditions are, by not focusing on the market, by not focusing on the prices, but instead focusing very much on the individuals, the stories, the history of what we're doing here, and just bringing that together in a way where it's like, let's just hang out, go to a bar, network, have some speakers, see some NFTs, understand what's going on, meet some people local to us, and build that network of community. You know, there's people I know down in South America that did NFT Day last year. I spoke to the guy this year, only a few weeks ago, to plan an event. And he told me, yeah, I'm still in contact with everyone that showed up. All these random people that showed up to this bar where he hosts an event, they're still in contact. And now they have this little community, this little network. And if we can do that at scale in 100 different places once a year, that ain't too bad. That's how we get that organic growth, even if the markets shrink, even if the market's going down. And I think that's what I'm excited for, is that we're seeing that time and time again. People that get it, people that are switched on, people that want to be here, they're not going anywhere. And I think that's just really cool to imagine what that looks like over the coming decades.
That's cool. Thanks for that, Luke. Shane?
So in the context of Stargaze, what really excites me is that just kind of onboarding more people to the ecosystem, because it really differentiates itself, because it's completely Web3 native, right? Everything is, there's no Stargaze like company, there's no like CEO, right? I'm more like a guide. I kind of do what the community asks me to do and ask what the team, ask what they want. And we as a team just kind of build it. And everything's voted on, right? Like, we can't just like turn off royalties on a dime if we want to, like we can't do that. Like, everything has to go through governance, everything has to go through kind of voting on the chain. So introducing more people to how things work in this native kind of Web3 world. We are onboarding some new collections from other chains. Introducing them to the community. Everyone loves hanging out on Discord. People are making friends every day. So bringing in more people, bridging from Ethereum, bridging from Polygon, Solana, And also working on Outposts. So Outposts is kind of a different model. Basically, you can have an outpost of Stargaze on another chain, and then the liquidity doesn't have to get fragmented, right? And then everyone can just kind of use the same protocol. So kind of excited about this model. I don't think it really exists yet. So just going to kind of experiment and see how that goes. Also, I think we might see some more activity in the NFT finance space, right? We saw the success of Blur. I think we're still on the very kind of early days of experimenting with stuff like, you know, like lending and borrowing, NFT perps and stuff like that. I think because there's not a lot of new people coming to the space right now, we can bring in people from DeFi, right? And to attract people from DeFi, we have to build a bit more kind of DeFi native protocols. So that's kind of another direction that we're going in. So I think we do want to bring in the casual gamers and the mainstream users, but we also kind of want to go in the other direction as well and bring in some more hardcore DeFi people into NFTs.
Thanks, Shane. Looks like there's a definite alignment with everybody else so far. Michael, you're up.
Yeah, so what gets me excited, you know, I think about my own life and how do I live a meaningful life and how do I, you know, kind of, you know, do things that map to a meaningful life. You define a meaningful life by finding a cause that's greater than yourself. And I try to, take the cause of the players as the things that I'm trying to advance. So every time I have a decision to make on a product, it's, you know, I can have a monetization outcome or I can have a player engagement retention outcome. If it's coin flip, I always err on the side of the player. So that makes me feel good about me, which is important to me. But I think the thing that excites me the most, candidly, is, you know, since the mid-90s with Ultima Online, when players started selling, you know, digital houses on eBay for $3,000 and they sold assets in Diablo on eBay as well. So much so that eBay actually came out in 2006 with a policy that said no more RMT, real money trading. We will outlaw, we'll report you to the publisher, developer. We will ban your account. We'll do all these terrible things for things that players have wanted to do forever. It's 30 years of them wanting to sell their stuff. And, you know, I very much these days am building content that lives in that web 2.5 kind of world, right? Where it's free to try, it's free to play. You get to own your stuff, but yet you do have to have a crypto-based wallet. You do have to own NFTs. You have to sell them on marketplaces. You have to understand what a fiat off-ramp looks like and understand, you know, this is a little bit of a different world, but it's a world you want to be in. You don't realize it, but, and it's maybe a little bit more complicated, but it's not scary. So creating those pathways, creating that education, creating a safe space, allowing them to learn, allowing them to have the option, I think is really, really important because that, you know, we know that, you know, I got in a little bit of a, I won't say a heated conversation, but on Discord the other day, players go, if I can't be profitable, if nobody can be profitable in this game, nobody's going to play. And I said, you know, guess what? In 2023, $2.1 billion was spent on classic gaming and players owned zero of those dollars or got zero of those dollars back. So you can tell me that nobody wants to play a game unless they can profit. I will tell you there's $201 billion that went one way. And just to have any percentage of that go back to the players is a really, really powerful idea. And for us to lead the charge in that regard or to allow for that to happen and build education around that and allow those kind of off ramps to exist is a really, really powerful thing for me. And that's what gets me excited. And that's what allows me to feel like I'm, you know, doing things that is kind of player led first and foremost.
Well, thanks for that, Michael. Huda, do you have anything you'd like to end with?
Honestly, yeah, I am excited about the level of talent that just continues to grow in this space. It's a lot like Luke was saying here in the bear market, the people that are still around are just some of the brightest minds in the world. And they're hyper-focused on using this tech that we've all just fallen in love with over the years. And so I'm excited for us to help show people that, really give people a glimpse inside at the people, the quality of people who are here building right now. I think it's really important to do that. And I'm really motivated to do exactly that. But also I'm excited that some of the buzzwords I heard throughout this episode, decentralization and utility and ownership, those were the things that won me over years ago that I fell in love with, that made me put all of my time into this space, and that none of that was snake oil, right? Some things were back in the day, like these perpetual, you know, royalties and things. Well, that wasn't a real thing back then. We'll make it a thing at some point, I believe. but that the core of what I fell in love with is still here, and it's what excites everybody else here. So I'm really excited about that. And just to see what we end up building over the next few years here into this next inevitable bull run, again, whenever that's coming.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I wanted to thank everybody here for joining the clubhouse. It's an open invite. You guys are always welcome to come back when we shoot these. Thanks again, guys, and cheers, and have an awesome day.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you guys very much.